Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's February 15th. We're in Yeshayahu, Perek Yud Gimel, Chapter 13. Masa Bavel. This is a prophecy about Bavel, Asher Chaza Yeshayahu ben Amoz, that Yeshayahu ben Amoz saw. This is going to be about Bavel, who we know is going to be the country that is eventually going to come and conquer Eretz Yisrael, destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Essentially, Bavel would do what Ashur did not do. Where Sancheriv was unsuccessful in trying to capture Yerushalayim, we know that Nebuchadnezzar will be successful eventually. So the Yeshayahu now is having a nevuah about Bavel and about what will happen to Bavel after they are successful in destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So this is a nevuah. This is more than 100 years before Bavel rises to power and destroys the Beis HaMikdash. And this is about the consequences to Bavel after that happens. So that's already foretold in advance. Alhar Nishpe Sunes, on a tranquil mountain, lift up a banner. Harimu Kol Lahem, lift your voice to them. Hanifu Yad, wave your hand, V'yavo Pischei Nedivim, and let those who are going to come and will attack the kingdoms, let them come. In other words, let the nations of the world, those who are going to come to attack and destroy Bavel, call to them from the tops of the mountain and have them gather together for their attack on Bavel. I have commanded my sanctified ones. Gam karasi giborai la'api. I have called my strong ones for my anger. Alize ga'avasi, the exalted ones of my grandeur. This is a reference to those who will eventually destroy Bavel. Who will destroy Bavel? It will be the alliance of Paras Umadai, the Persians and the Medes, which we're familiar with from the Purim story, which comes a number of years after the destruction of Bavel at the hands of the Persians and the Medes. So Hashem is calling to them that they should come to destroy Bavel. He refers to them as Mikudashi, which means Mikudashai, which means my sanctified ones, which sounds like they're good people. But the word Kadosh really does not necessarily mean something positive. Kadosh, which generally means something positive, the literal translation really is separated, or designated, set aside. That's what kadosh means. So normally it's a set aside for a good purpose. But we do find the word kadosh is used in a negative purpose. For example, a prostitute is called a kadesha because she is designated for znus, for immorality. So she is called a kadesha. So you find the word kadosh does not necessarily mean a positive thing. The Gemara Maseches Brachos says over here that Paras Amadai are Mekudash, they are designated for Gehenim. And that's what it means over here, Limkudashai, for my Kadosh ones. But that is, of course, even later. Right now, we're talking about their destruction of Bavel. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Kol Hamon Beharim, Dmus Amrav, a cacophony of sound in the mountains, an image of a huge nation that's going to come to attack Bavel. Kol Shaon, a sound of destruction. Mamlechos Goyim Ne'esafim, the kingdoms of nations will gather. Hashem Tzvakos Mefaked Tzvamilchama. Hashem is appointing the legions of war. Boim Me'eretz Merchok, they're going to come from a faraway land. Miktzei Hashamayim, from the edge of the heavens. Hashem Uchlei Zamo Hashem, and the weapons of his anger, meaning these armies are the weapons of Hashem's anger. L'chabel kol ha'aretz, to destroy all the land, meaning all the land of Bavel. Hein lilu ki karov yom Hashem, call out or cry out because the day of Hashem is close. Kishod mishakayavo, taking spoils or taking captives from Hashem will come. Al kain kol yadayim tirpena, therefore all hands will get weak of Bavel. V'chol avavenosh yimas, all hearts of man will melt. V'niv halu, and they will be confused. Tzirim v'chaval yochezun, pangs and pains will grab hold of them. Kayole da yechilun, they will happen like a woman in labor. That's a common analogy, as we've seen many times when talking about an intense pain. That is a common analogy. Ish el reyeo yismahu, each man with his friend will be perplexed. Pnei lehavim pneihem, the faces of fire are their faces, referring to the enemy armies that are coming against Bavel. They're going to appear fiery to the people of Bavel. They're going to be terrified. Hine yom Hashem ba, behold, the day of Hashem is coming. Achzari ve'evra v'charon af, cruelty and anger, another word for anger. Lasum ha'aretz l'shama, to make the land desolate. V'chato'eha yashmid b'mena, and its sinners he will destroy from that land. All talking about Bavel. Ki choch ve'ashamayim uchsilehem, lo yahilu aram, the stars of the heavens and the constellations will not give their light. Chashach Hashemach b'tzeiso, the sun will be darkened when it comes out. V'yareach lo yagi'a oro, and the moon will not shine its light. The people of Bavel will appear like everything is dark, even when it's broad daylight. Ufakarati al tevel ra'a, and I will visit upon the land evil. Val reshayim avonam, and on the evil people their sins. Vishpati ga'un zedim, and I will taken captive or gotten rid of the grandeur of these people, of these sinners. Vigavas aritzim ashpil, and the grandeur of these great leaders I will knock down. Okay, it's okay. Period. Now, Baruch Ato Adonai Elohim Melech Haolam Shakol Nimro. At this point, we should pause and explain a few things that happened with the destruction of Bavel, so we understand the next few psukim and how they work. Much of this, all of this, we've spoken about before because we have learned Sefer Daniel, where this is discussed. We've learned Sefer Ezra Nehemiah, so we've gone through a lot of this, and it's mentioned in other places, but we will review some of the history of what happened. Nebuchadnezzar was the king over Bavel for 45 years. In the 19th year of his reign, that is when he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But he was king for 45 years. His son, who took over for him after his death, his name was Evil-Merodach. Evil-Merodach took over for his father, Nebuchadnezzar, and he ruled for 23 years. 45 plus 23 is 68. But the Gemara tells us it's not really 68 years, it's really 67 years, because Nebuchadnezzar really ruled for 44 and a half years, and Evil-Merodach for 22 and a half years. So it's really only 67 years. Belshazzar, who's the son of Evil-Merodach, he rules for 3 years, which gives us a total of 70 years. We know there was a nevuah that there were two different nevuahs about 70 years. Two different prophecies regarding 70 years. One prophecy we learned recently was in Yirmiyahu about 70 years. L'charvos Yerushalayim, that for the destruction of Yerushalayim, it would be 70 years before there was a redemption. That's referring to the second Beis HaMikdash, which was rebuilt 70 years after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. But nobody knew what it meant precisely when it was said. It was just 70 years from the destruction of Yerushalayim. There was another nevuah in Daniel, where 70 years Libavel. After 70 years of Bavel, Hashem is going to appear or make himself known. So the non-Jews were aware of these prophecies. They were famous, and the Jews, of course, were as well, but nobody knew precisely what they meant. But this led to a situation where everybody was counting the years. And since nobody knew precisely when, what it they referred to, so everybody counted differently. Now we know in retrospect that the two prophecies, at least the way they turned out, it could be that there were different possibilities for how they could have come true. But the way they actually came true were they were two different counts of 70 years. There was one count of 70 years, which was, as was mentioned, Yirmiyahu's count. He didn't count it himself, he was given the prophecy, but what his prophecy is referring to is 70 years after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash would be built. It's referring actually to the beginning of the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash, not the completion. It took several years to build it. But from the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash to the beginning of the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash was 70 years. So that was one count. There was another 70 years, which is Daniel's 70 years, which was the 70 years of Bavel, which means that when Bavel had 70 years of world power, then Bavel would be destroyed. And that was a different 70-year count. Now, the truth is that, I'm saying this parenthetically because this is not going to be relevant to tonight's shiur, that the first set of 70 years that we spoke about, which is really the second set, is a little bit later in time, but that 70 years mentioned in Yirmiyahu really has a variation, which is that we also know that when Paras Umadai, when they made their alliance, so the Persians and the Medes, the way their alliance worked was that they had a king or an emperor, whatever you want to call him, and then there was a cabinet, if you want to call it a congress or something like that. So they made a deal that if the king comes from one of those countries, then the governors or the rest of the leaders that congress will come from the other one of the countries. In other words, they didn't want to have a monopoly of either Paras or Mada. In order to maintain a fair alliance, it was, you had one or the other. So the first king of the alliance between Paras and Madai was Daryavesh, Darius, who was a Mede. And he's the one who, as we'll see, will destroy Bavel. But he was killed in battle a year after that. And he was succeeded by Koresh, Cyrus, who was a Persian. And Koresh allowed the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews went back to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild. They laid the foundation, and then the people living in Eretz Yisrael, the non-Jews living there, they sent word to Koresh that the Jews were rebelling, and the work was halted. And it took 18 years until the work was restarted with the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the second Beis HaMikdash was actually built in stages. The foundation was laid 18 years prior to the real construction taking place. The Purim story happens during those 18 years, when Achashverosh, who is Persian, takes over for this controversy whether there was a king between Koresh and Achashverosh, but he's the king during that time. The people who stopped the work in Eretz Yisrael in the time of Koresh were led by at least one of the sons of Haman, who was a governor in Eretz Yisrael. So it's very intertwined with the Purim story. But that 18-year difference, that 18-year gap, corresponds as well to the 18-year gap between the first time that Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and when he actually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. You see, there's 70 years for Bavel. Bavel, as we said, Nebuchadnezzar is 44 and a half years, which is called 45. Evel Merodach is 22 and a half years, which is called 23. So that's 67, 3 years of Belshazzar. But it was in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar, the second year of Babel's world supremacy, that they conquered Eretz Yisrael for the first time. In his second year, he conquered Eretz Yisrael. In his first year, Nebuchadnezzar conquered Nineveh. Nineveh was the capital of Ashur, which was the powerful country at the time, and he established himself as the world power at that point. In the second year, he conquered Yerushalayim for the first time. But when he conquered Yerushalayim the first time, he did not destroy it. He just made the king, who was Jehoiakim, subservient to him, to Nebuchadnezzar. That's what he did. And it was only 18 years later that eventually, because of a series of rebellions, that he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So, 70 years from the beginning of Bavel, beginning of Bavel's world supremacy, that's what we're going to talk about here in a moment, that's when Bavel is destroyed. A year later is 70 years from when Yerushalayim was first conquered by Bavel. Because that was the second year of Bavel that happened. At that point, Koresh gives permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So it seems like the Nevuah about from the destruction of Yerushalayim would be 7 years, might have taken place, could have been established at that point. Meaning before the Purim story, I mean there would never have been a Purim story, that the second Beis HaMikdash might have been built then. But we were not Zocha, we did not merit, and it was stopped, and it was only 18 years later, which would mean 7 years was counted from the destruction, the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, not from the conquering of Yerushalayim. So, as I said, it's possible that Hashem deliberately had made it vague that it could have happened in different ways. But when the work was stopped, the pasuk in Daniel says that Daniel, who was there for that laying of the foundation, became very upset and davened to Hashem and asked why did it have to stop after it seemed like we were being redeemed at that point. But in the end we were not, and it would be 18 long years before we actually were able to successfully rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Now, how does the destruction of Babel take place? So that is an equally famous story, which you are aware of, which is that because the non-Jews were so attuned to this prophecy of 70 years, well, Belshazzar, knowing that he was the king during whose reign the 70 years would pass, so he counted the 70 years as well, and he decided the 70 years were up. But they weren't up. He thought they were up. He thought they were up because he counted 70 years, but he counted 45 years for Nebuchadnezzar and 23 years for Evel Merodach, instead of 44 and a half and 22 and a half. So he added a year. So, as far as he was concerned, after he ruled for 2 years, the 7 years were over. So when that was over, he assumed that that meant Hashem had forsaken the Jews. He was never going to come back. The Jews were done. That Hashem was done with the Jews, and even though Hashem was a powerful God, but he didn't care anymore, because he didn't come back after 70 years. And at the same time, he had a pitched battle with this alliance of Paras Umadai, who were trying to usurp him and trying to make themselves the world power. He had a pitched battle, and he, Belshazzar, king of Bavel, won that battle. So the combination of thinking the 70 years were over and the fact that he defeated this threat to his kingdom caused him to make a big party. At this big party, he took out the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, which no king before him was willing to do because they were scared, because they all knew that Hashem was going to come back after 70 years, and nobody wanted to pay the price for having used the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. But Belshazzar assumed it's over, so he used them. And that is the famous story where a hand appeared and wrote on the wall. And no one could understand what it said. And Daniel was there, and Daniel read the words and explained them, that because Belshazzar had used the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, he was going to be destroyed. He was going to be killed. When that happened, all the government leaders, the princes, the upper crust of the Babylonian society that was at that party, they became terrified. They also realized that Daniel is Hashem's prophet, Hashem's leader, the leader for Hashem, and therefore they willingly gave him gifts of gold and silver. They had gold and silver with them at the party, and they gave them to Daniel at that moment. That night, the Persian and Mede army regrouped, turned around and mounted a counterattack, routed the army of Bavel. Belshazzar is captured and executed by Daryavesh, the king of Paras Umadai. Daryavesh the Mede, the king of Paras Umadai. And Bavel is destroyed on that night. That's the 70 years after the ascendancy of Bavel as a world power. What we learned about in Daniel is the amazing thing that happens next, which is Daniel goes almost seamlessly from being the top advisor to the Babylonian king, Belshazzar, and really the Babylonian kings, he was the top advisor to Nebuchadnezzar as well, to becoming the top advisor to Daryavesh the Mede, which shouldn't be possible. Because normally when a new kingdom comes in, they execute everybody from the old kingdom. And Daniel just seamlessly remains the top advisor to all of the kings while we were in Golos. The famous story of Daniel in the lion's den takes place during that 1 year of Daryavesh's reign, with Daniel as his second, as his major advisor. Yes?
So I'm just confused with the timing. When Daniel was davening because the enemies were giving them a hard time with rebuilding, so that was still within the 7 years? That wasn't.
Well, it depends how you count the 70 years. Meaning that you have the 70 years of Bavel was over. Okay. That was done. Now you have the 70 years of L'charvos Yerushalayim, to the destruction of Yerushalayim. If you count that from the time Yerushalayim was conquered for the first time, then that would end when Koresh gave permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And they went and laid the foundation. But then it was stopped. So Daniel realized that those 70 years are actually not over. And instead, they were really being counted from the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which was 18 years later.
But hadn't they been told to go back and start?
Like, yeah. Koresh told them to go back and start.
Koresh told them.
Yeah. Koresh said, Hashem told me to tell you to go. Hashem made me the shliach to have you go and start. They were supposed to. So either it was Hashem meant it to be something which would be a false start, or at the time when we started it, perhaps there was a possibility we would be zeich to rebuild, and then we lost the schus. Our averus stopped it. That was what Daniel said. A lot of the famous tachanunim that we say in Slichos, and on Monday and Thursday, come from that plea of Daniel to Hashem. Hashem Shema, Hashem Slacha, Hashem Akshiva. There's a whole bunch of Hatei Elokai Aznacha Ushema Pekach Enecho Re'eshem Oseinu Ve'oyerish Nikroshim Ha'olel. That's all from that davening of Daniel after the Beis HaMikdash is, the building of the Beis HaMikdash is stopped. It's all from there. Now, so why do we know that background? So we needed all that background because Pasuk in Beis verse 12, Okir Enosh Mipaz Va'adam mikesem ofir. I will enrich a man from treasures, and a man from these precious stones. That is a reference to Daniel, because the Bavel's destruction coincides with Daniel becoming very wealthy, having all of this wealth that's willingly given to him that night. And there is something else that happens. You see, first, Bavel is destroyed by Paras Umadai. But then, I just want to check what year it was, but then, we're going to get to it, we'll get to it a little bit later. There is something else that happens. Yeah, well, let me just see what year it was, hold on. The next year, Hashem brings destruction to Bavel as well. I mean, first he has Bavel overrun by Paras Umadai, and they're going to just cruelly destroy the people, like all kinds of cruel things which we're going to read about now. Don't feel bad for them. The Babylonians were pretty cruel people themselves. So they got what was coming to them, as we'll see. But the next year, after all that happens, Hashem sends destruction against Bavel, and he does to Bavel what he did to Sodom and those cities. So Bavel gets a double patch. First comes the armies of Paras Umadai, and then comes a heavenly destruction against Bavel. Now we also know that the rule is, we know this from Kriyas Yamsuf, that when Hashem is about to destroy a country, a nation, first he subdues or destroys the angel that represents that nation. Every nation has an angel that represents them, and the Hashem either subdues or destroys that angel. So, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Al Kain Shamayim Argiz, therefore the heavens I will rile up, V'sirash Ha'aretz Mimekoma, and the land will have upheaval from its place, Be'evras Hashem Tzvakos, with the anger of Hashem Tzvakos, Uviyom Charon Apo, the day of His anger. Meaning again, that because the Malach that represents Bavel is going to be subdued first, or destroyed first, before Hashem actually destroys Bavel. So that's what it means in Shamayim, there's also going to be upheaval. V'haya kitzvi mudach, v'chetzon v'in mekabetz, he will be, meaning Bavel will be, like a deer that is chased away, and like sheep that there's no one to gather. Ish el amo yifnu, each man will run to his nation. V'ish el aratzo yonusu, each man will run to his land. Anybody who was an ally of Bavel will run away. Kol hanimtza yidaker, anybody who's found, any soldier that is found, will be run through, will be killed. V'chol hanispe yipol becharev, and anybody who will gather into the cities will eventually, they'll be sieged to the cities, and then they will be killed by the sword. Va'olalehem yirut shu leinehem, and their young babies will be crushed in front of their eyes. Yishasu batehem, their houses will be razed. Uneshem tishachavna, and their wives will be molested. Hidini meir aleihem es madai, I am causing to rise up against them madai. Asher kesef lo yachshovu, they will not care about money, about silver. Vizav lo yachbetzuvo, they won't be interested in gold. All they're going to care about is the killing and the destruction of the people of Bavel. Ukshasos niarim teratashna, and their bows, like bows and arrows, will destroy their young men. They will not care. They won't have any mercy over babies. Albanim lo sachus einam, on children they will not have any mercy. And Bavel, which was the exalted kingdom, this great powerful nation, like Hashem turned over Sodom and Amora. That's the next year. After the destruction through the army, will come the destruction directly from Hashem. Lo seishev lanetzach, it will not be populated, will not be settled forever. Lo sishkon ad dor vador, it will not be dwelled in for all generations. V'lo yahel sham aravi, not even an aravi, which is a nomad who wanders, not even he will find any place to live there. V'roim lo yarbitzu sham, and shepherds will not have their flocks crouched down there. Rather, v'ravtzu sham tziyim umalu vadeyem ochim, rather these wild animals, various types of wild animals, will crouch there, and the houses will be filled with them. V'shachnu sham benos yana, these wild birds of prey will dwell there. U'si'irim yirakdu sham, and si'irim will dance there. What are si'irim? Si'irim are shadim. What are shadim? Shadim are demons. Shadim are real creatures that really exist. We do not have any connection to them because the spiritual state of the world is so diminished, we don't experience things directly that are not physical. But there are shadim, they do exist. The Rashi says in two places that Noach brought them on the Teva. They do exist, they were around from before Noach, and Noach brought them on the Teva because they could not live in the Mabul. They needed to be in the Teva, even though we don't see them, but they need to live. Shadim, the Gemara tells us, are similar to human beings in three ways, and are similar to angels in three ways. The three ways they're similar to human beings is that Shadim are, they are born and they die. Shadim eat and drink. Shadim sleep. All these things Shadim do. They're more like angels in that you can't see them. They also fly. And in certain ways, they're like angels. But they are also like human beings. And the Gemara explains that they are like partial human beings. It's a little bit of a funny kind of status, but they exist. So, Si'irim Yirak Dusham, demons will dance there. It's not a very safe place to be in Bavel. The Gemara tells us it is usur for a person to live in Bavel based on this pasuk. Va'ana iyim be'almenosav, and these wild animals will call out from their palaces. V'saniyim be'hechle oneg, and again these serpents or these other types of animals in their large halls that were used for pleasure. V'karov lavo ita, its time is close to coming. V'yamea lo yimashechu, and its days will not go on for a long time. It will be cut down. So this is all about the destruction of Bavel. And it is foretold in advance about the destruction. Now you see why they were worried about the 70 years. Because it wasn't just that there'd be 70 years, but the actual destruction is being told very clearly over here. Not only that, but it's also told which country is going to attack them. It says, Madai. So you see that when Belshazzar, when the 70 years were over, so he was ecstatic the Jews were not redeemed. But then when he had a pitched battle with Paras Umadai, led by Madai, and he won, that proved that all of this is false. None of this is going to happen. You see that the 70 years are over, Hashem did not come back, and therefore this prophecy, which is that Madai would destroy Bavel, is not going to happen. And so he took out the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, and the rest is history. It happens just as it said, and Madai comes back with Paras, and they destroy Bavel, and Belshazzar is executed, and the country is totally laid waste. And then the next year comes the destruction from Hashem, so that no one can ever live there. Now, Parak Yudalid, chapter 14, which we're going to start, continues. It's not really a break over here, even though there's a chapter. It's not really another chapter. And we're going to continue over here, but you should know that we're going to read a little bit first, but one of the things we're going to have to do is to review the history of Nebuchadnezzar himself, which we learned way back in Sefer Daniel, but there's going to be references here to Nebuchadnezzar, the person Nebuchadnezzar, and we're going to have to learn about him a little bit as well. But let us read a few psukim first in Perek Yudal, chapter 14. Ki rachim Hashem es Yaakov, when Hashem will find mercy on Yaakov, uvachar od bi Yisrael, he would choose again in Yisrael, v'nicham al masam, he'll put them on their land, v'nilva hager aleihem, and the ger will join them, v'nisbechu al beis Yaakov, they will join together with beis Yaakov. Now, this pasuk is not, it's referring partially to the second Beis HaMikdash, but really it's referring to the very end, which hasn't happened yet. Because this is talking about a Geula Shlema, a complete redemption, which will happen, of course, only in the future. The second Beis HaMikdash was not a complete redemption. So when that happens, there'll be many Gerim also that will join in with the Jewish people. We're going to come back to this in a moment. Ulkachum amim ve'avium amakomam, the nations will take them and bring them to their place. V'isnachalum beis Yisrael, and they will give the land to beis Yisrael to inherit. Al admas Hashem, the land of Hashem. I'm sorry. V'isnachalum beis Yisrael admas Hashem la'avadim lishvachos, and beis Yisrael will then take those non-Jews on their land as slaves and maids. Vahu shovim lishoveim, they will take captive those who had captured them. Viradu binokseim, and they will subjugate those who had subjugated them. Their taskmasters will be subjugated by the Jews. Okay. Now there is a statement in Chazal, which is repeated a few times in Shas, based on the words at the end of Pasuk Aleph, V'nisbechu al Beis Yaakov, which means they will join, referring to the Gerim, the converts, will join Beis Yaakov. The words of Chazal are, Kashim Gerim li Yisrael, which means that converts are difficult for the Jewish people, Kisapachas, coming from this word, v'nispechu, like sapachas. What is sapachas? Sapachas is a term in the Chumash referring to tzara'as. That converts are kashim liYisrael, are difficult for the Jewish people, like tzara'as. That's the statement in Chazal, and it comes from here, because the word nispechu is similar to the word, which means the joining together, is similar to the word sapachas. So the Rishonim offer various explanations for what that means. Kashim Gerim LeYisrael Kisapachas. It is a true statement. Chazal say it. So the question is, what does it mean? And essentially it depends, because it depends on the Gerim. There are Gerim and there are Gerim, and it depends who we're talking about. There are negative connotations of that statement, and then the statement is overall negative. To be difficult like tzaras is negative, but negative for whom? So one explanation is it's referring to the converts themselves, because sometimes you have a person who converts and then they don't stick with it, but the conversion is real, the conversion is sincere, and therefore that person really is Jewish. So it's bad enough that you have people who are born Jewish who don't practice. That hurts everybody. It hurts them. It hurts us, because every Jew is responsible for every other one. And it hurts the whole world. So we have all these droves of Jews who are not practicing. That hurts everybody. So there's no value in adding more Jews who are not practicing. That only hurts everybody. That's kisapachas. That's like tzaras. That's a bad thing. It's a bad thing for everybody. So, for the gerim that become gerim and then don't stick with it, that's difficult for the Jews, like sapachas, like tzaras. That's one explanation. But then there is what you would call the diametrically opposed, explanation, which is that sometimes you have gerim who become gerim and they are not only practicing, they practice better than those who are born Jewish. So then it becomes almost a referendum. Like, where's everybody else? Like, what's going on over here? You're born Jewish and you're not practicing well. And here you have a person who wasn't born Jewish. Look where they are. So it ruins the curve. Let's put it that way. Right? So kashim gamli sokis hapachas, they're difficult for the Jewish people like Tzaras because it makes everybody else look bad. So that's the diametrically opposed explanation. That's, both explanations are true. It depends on the ger. Depends who we're talking about. We all know that we make it difficult for conversion, meaning we don't encourage conversion, and at first discourage it because we have to make sure the person really is sincere. Because again, no one's doing anyone any favors by converting or by converting people who are insincere. No one's doing anybody, not themselves, not anybody else. It's not a good thing. On the other hand, the converts who are sincere is a wonderful thing, but that can make everybody else look bad. So that is, both those explanations derived from over here, from this word, v'nisbechu al beis Yaakov. There are a few other explanations that they're similar. Those are the two extremes, and then those that fall somewhere in the middle of those extremes. But those two will give you a sense of how different the explanations are, but they're all correct. And again, it depends who we are talking about. Sometimes you have a misplaced sense of pity or mercy, that we're feeling bad for somebody. If someone, a non-Jew who wants to convert, and you have some Jews who feel bad for that person, and they help the person along, and then they get them to convert, and they think they've done a big mitzvah. But the truth is, not only did they not do a big mitzvah, they were cruel to that person. They hurt that person. Because that person, until now, only had to be careful with 7 mitzvahs. Now they gotta be careful with 613. And if they're not observing, these quote-unquote merciful Jews have cruelly hurt the person who they converted. They should not have done it. It's not something people should just be doing as a, like, oh, we feel so bad. It's a misplaced sense of empathy, because it's only hurting that person. If the person is in fact sincere, then it's helping that person, and it's helping everybody else too. It's helping everybody. But it's important that be vetted properly. Pasuk Gimel. V'hoya b'yom haniach Hashem lecha mi atzpecha umi rugzecha, and it will be at the time that Hashem, for the Jewish people, will give you calm from all of your sadness and all of the anger that's been against you. And all of the heavy labor that was worked against you. When that happens, you will say this mashal about the king of Bavel, about Nebuchadnezzar. You'll say, Eich Shabbas Noges. How is it that the Noges, who's the taskmaster, is now Shavas, is now taken captive? Shavsa, Shavsa Madheva. This grandeur, this greatness has now been taken captive. Shavar Hashem Matei Rishayim. Hashem has broken the staff of the evil ones. Shevet Moshlim, the staff of those who were lording over others. Make Amim Be'evra. Hashem strikes down the nations with anger. Makas Bilti Sara. A strike that will not go away. Rodev Av Goyim. He subjugates with anger the nations. Murdaf Bli Chasach. They will be chased without any cessation, without stopping. Nacha Shakta. Okay. Nacha Shakta Kol Haaretz Patskurina. Now, starting here, we're going to talk about Nebuchadnezzar himself. I'm looking at the time and just deciding how much to do it right now. The Nebuchadnezzar himself was a terribly evil man. Nebuchadnezzar was a Rasha, Merusha, a terrible, terrible evil person. He was also an extremely talented is not the right word. I guess powerful. He was a person that had qualities that were nearly supernatural. He was a very, very strong person, huge amount of endurance. He was the kind of person that was terrifying to other people, and he was the kind of person who didn't need other people. He was a very, very powerful and independent person. And he was very evil. And the as a result, everybody listened to what he had to say. Everybody was subjugated by him. But they loathed him. He had no friends. They hated him. And when he finally dies, so then they're happy that he's dead. And the people who he lorded over, who were terrified of him, they were waiting for this day when Nebuchadnezzar would die, when he would die. But his death has some drama to it. And that's also going to be discussed over here. Now, it's a little bit early. I just don't want to start this new topic right now. What I'd rather do is pause here. And what we're going to do, I'll give you the introduction for next time, is we're going to lead off with, again, it's a review for many of you, but we're going to lead off with main points in the life of Nebuchadnezzar that are relevant to what we're going to be talking about over here. In the ways that he lorded over others and the things that happened to him, both when he was alive and then also after death, including the drama between him and his son, Evel Merudach, which is also very, very relevant to what we're going to have. So we're going to start next time, Yirtzeh Hashem, from Perek Yudal, chapter 14, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.